the palytoxin got into the cut that was on my thumb here, and my whole hand was swollen like a balloon. Like I went in and they had no idea what they were dealing with, and I kept telling them, like, this is palytoxin. I know exactly what it is.
What's up, reef fanatics? Welcome to another episode of the Coral Reef Talk podcast, here with Levi Peterson.
What's going on, guys?
And today we're going to be talking about green hair algae, cyanobacteria, and how those things affects your reef aquarium, maybe some remedies about how to get rid of it, and just how it appears in your reef tank in general.
Definitely.
So, Levi, how you been doing? What have you been up to?
I've been busy. This past week at work was kind of crazy. We had one of our workers call out most of the week, so I did a little extra driving and stuff, which is fine, but it was just... Yeah. It was a long week, but it was a good week. So very progressive. We got a lot done. I've been doing a lot at the house too, you know, getting things done. And the weather's been really nice here down in Central Florida. So we're trying to get a lot of the yard work done before, you know, the big heat wave comes for the summer.
Yes.
So, trying to get a lot done now so we don't have to do it later. So
it was getting really, really cold a few days in a row. And yeah. Now it's pretty comfortable. It's calmed down a little bit.
Definitely.
So yeah, that's always good. So I did a water change on the 10-gallon tanks, and they are looking amazing right now. It's
sweet.
Pretty awesome. And I also added a little wave maker, so we got some increased water flow. And, dude, just the shimmer of that LED light, it's looking nice.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I will say that mantis shrimp is getting bigger.
Really?
And, I mean, of course it's going to grow, but, I mean, it's making me a little bit nervous with some of the rock work and stuff. I think he's just making the whole tank his territory.
You know? Yeah, that's probably a good idea of what's going on there.
Yeah, and the crabs are getting bigger. There's one like giant hairy crab or decorator crab, or one of them is just like super huge now.
Yeah.
From what he was. And yeah, I don't know. Good stuff. More to share about that later. We'll be up on the channel about that. But before we jump into green hair algae, Reef Builders have been putting out some really good articles. And one of their latest articles as of filming this video is the industry pioneer Walt Smith confirms Fiji corals are back for 2024.
Yeah, this is really exciting, especially for like the collectors. A lot of hobby collectors, mm-hmm. That collect like certain acros. A lot of really nice acros come from Fiji, and then you got your like bright green spaghetti leathers. Those are really common in Fiji. Those used to come out of Fiji all the time. And then probably the most common coral that people think of when they think of Fiji is the yellow Fiji toadstool. Those things are gorgeous. They're awesome. And I can't wait to see them back in the industry. There's a few, you know, that come in here and there from Tonga that are yellow, but not like the Fiji yellows. I mean, they're insane. They're incredible. And I can't wait to see what all is going to be able to come out of Fiji. I'm super excited.
Yeah, that's really cool. Lots of cool colors come to us from that side of the ocean. And like looking at the article, it looks like some clove polyps, like green, like lime green looking clove polyps that look really cool.
And clove polyps, a lot of different kinds of soft corals too.
Yeah. But there was like something that was going on, like something they were dealing with for like 6+ years, and they're finally able to ship the full range of corals. So yeah, like over 60 different species the article's talking about.
It's like humanely collecting wild corals, and then they're going to be doing some farmed corals as well. So pretty neat to see what all comes in. I'm super excited to see.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. But now let's shift gears here, and we're going to talk about some things that are not so fun to deal with in your reef aquarium. And then something that we all will tend to go through. It seems like this is just something that happens, especially when you're setting up a brand new tank, and even if you're brand new to the hobby or experienced, we've all gone through green hair algae.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Green hair algae is definitely one of the most defeating algaes, you know, because once it gets going, it's going to go quick because it spreads like wildfire and it's nasty. It's ugly.
Yeah.
You literally will want to look at your tank and just tear it down because it goes crazy. But there's ways around that. So we're going to kind of break that down here. Break down some chemical ways and even some natural ways that you can remove it. So
yeah, for sure. So for starters, where does green hair algae come from? Like, what are we talking about?
Like, so green hair algae really can come from anywhere. Like when you start putting corals in your tank or even live rock, any different kind of species of hair algae that are lingering in the live rock could potentially start growing, especially if you have high nutrients in your system. That plays a big role in how fast your algae grows and just pretty much what it does. But yeah, you can get green hair algae from about anywhere, and there's different species, but they're, most of the strains will just go crazy, like berserk, especially when you have higher nutrients, they'll take off.
Yeah, and when you're talking about nutrients, you're talking about nitrates and phosphates.
Yeah.
Probably majority phosphate, but they're in a relationship together, so that combination, you're going to grow green hair algae for sure. So whenever you're first setting up a tank, a lot of times that's what you're going to see as your tank progresses. And it could also be water quality, right?
Definitely.
So if you're not using a good water source initially, or water source that's higher in phosphates, that's going to fuel your green hair algae.
Yeah. So like why people recommend, or experts recommend, you know, using roadie water, because the TDS levels are very low, if not zero. Because if you're just getting random tap water or water from like a spigot or something, like you got to understand, like the elements are all over the place and different areas. Like you could drive down the road from my house and probably get a totally different test, completely different to where like my well water would be or whatever. Like some people get higher iron, some people like have calcium problems. I mean, there's so many different issues. And I mean, if you're topping off your water with tap water that's super high in iron, you are going to have some major algae problems.
Yeah. And so getting that RODI unit at home, or just using the roadie water, is going to control the phosphates. You're going to have no like metals in the water. So zero TDS is what we're looking for. Yes, absolutely. So whenever you start seeing it grow, I would say you want to probably do some testing, see what your nutrients are, check your water, see if you need to do more water changes, do larger water changes, or start to get it out manually ahead of time, but also check your lighting schedule.
Yeah, that can play a factor too. Just like having the light on for long periods of time. I mean, algae is photosynthetic, so it will just grow. I mean, there used to be a tank at my old house that I had, and I didn't realize this because I'd fall asleep, and I thought it would go off after I slept, but one night I got home super late and that light was still on, because I was always wondering why the hair algae in that tank was just crazy. And I figured it out that the light was staying on all night. So I changed up the schedule and fixed it, and the hair algae went away pretty significantly rather quickly, especially with some water changes. But yeah, I mean, just light schedules in general can help with algae. A lot of my tanks, since I'm like up really early and home later in the day, I try to have them come on like midday. So when I come home, I can like enjoy them into the evening a little longer, instead of like, you know, them being on in the morning.
Yeah, that's a good point. You can set the light schedule to be on when you're home to view the tank, because what's the point of having the light on while you're away at work or while you're sleeping?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely schedule that for that time. As far as for the new reefers, like what's a good schedule? I mean, I'd usually recommend between 8 to 10 hours of a lighting schedule.
Yeah. So when I'm setting up a tank and setting up a light, especially depending on if it has coral or not, I try to give corals at least 10 hours worth of light, you know, for say like 6 to 4 or whatever, just a decent amount of time. That way they have a nice long photo period to be able to photosynthesize and absorb the light and grow. Because I mean, if you're not giving them enough light, they'll just slowly kind of wither away over time. But if you have like fish only tanks and predator tanks and such, I mean, you don't really have to worry about the light as much, because if you have the light on all the time, you're just going to start to hit algae problems. Not even just hair algae, but just algae on the glass and such. So
yeah, for sure. And another thing is the location of your tank too. So if you have your tank next to an open window that's receiving daylight all day long or intense sunlight, you'll notice on that side of the tank that it's going to start growing algae quicker, and you'll just start seeing a big mess.
Definitely.
And even if your tank's not next to a window, depending on what's in your water, like we've already talked about, you can start to grow green hair algae. So for example, this tank right here, this was my 75 gallon, and you can see just the green hair algae everywhere. And this was like my tank from like 12 years ago. But yeah, you can see that it's just taken over everything and everywhere.
Yep.
And it's that bright green. And what it can do is it can just grow around everything. Your corals aren't going to like it. It's going to kind of suffocate them, get in their space, because it's taking over. But yeah, so it can become a problem really fast. So let's jump into, I guess, some ways to alleviate the problem. What do you do when you have green hair algae, especially if it's that bad?
Yeah, so that bad, I mean, there's chemical options, but me personally, I like to, you know, try the most natural way possible, which would be kind of, it stinks to do this, but removing your live rock even, especially if it's as bad as it was in that scenario, and kind of cleaning off your live rock a little bit. or simply just doing constant water changes, lowering your light schedule for a period of time just to try to eradicate the algae. It'll take a long period of time, but if you keep up with your maintenance really well and very faithfully, your nutrients or whatever causing the issue, it should stop unless you're, you know, adding a bunch of iron or something into your water that's causing it. It really just also depends on the factor. If you can decide the factor that's causing the algae to grow, that's going to make your solution a lot easier to figure out. So
yeah, definitely. And I would say, well, at least for me, I would choose the manual removal option over chemicals. And there's a few chemicals out there on the market that people are like, yeah, this is what I use. This is going to knock it out. But changing up water flow, doing water changes, really getting in there and pulling it off of the rock work. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily pull my rocks out of the tank. I just went in there and was just picking it up, picking it off. So like day after day, that was my maintenance, and it can be tedious and it can be a big headache, especially with that much algae. But I mean, sometimes you got to do the hard work and get in there and start pulling it out.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, as what you were saying, like as you're doing water changes, you're staying on top of your parameters and you're keeping that nutrients low. I just want to thank our channel sponsor for the podcast, and that is Printed Reef. Printed Reef is providing 3D printed solutions for your reef aquarium. And they do that by providing things like the sand stand and these coral holders and even mushroom cages like this. And they have many more products to offer you over at printedreef.com. And if you're a subscriber to the Coral Reef Talk, you can go over to printedreef.com/thecoralreeftalk and use the discount code to save 10% off your purchase. So you can use the code The Coral Reef Talk at checkout, and that is going to save you 10% off of your Printed Reef products. The link and the discount code will be down in the description below or the show notes here on the podcasting platform. If you're watching this on the video podcast, you'll be able to see the products that I'm holding up right now. If you're listening, check out the show notes for more information. But you have some pictures as well of some green hair algae here.
Yeah, so I mean, this is just a dead Helmetia algae that just was sitting in the tank, and it just kind of collected just debris, and it's just a breeding ground, you know, just for that algae to take off. And you can even see a little bit of cyanobacteria in there. But I've since removed this piece of algae, and then I've also done quite a few water changes to help out. I was having some issues with my algae scrubber, so I haven't been running that recently. I just recently got it fixed. But yeah, since the algae scrubber went out, it's been kind of hectic because I am a very hefty feeder. Yeah. And even with weekly water changes, this tank was still seeing a little heavy nutrients, so I was starting to see a couple issues arise. I mean, it was just crazy to see, like, just without having the algae scrubber on, what like was happening. Because I change the algae scrubber out like once a week. I'm cleaning it out because it's just, it grows so much algae. But yeah, without that running, I definitely had to knock it down and back it up on feeding a little bit while I was getting that fixed. But yeah, cyano hair algae, it's no fun. It like, it comes and goes, like I said, with nutrients. Or I mean, just figuring out exactly what's causing the issue. Like if you have high iron in your tank, which you can, there's some test kits out there for it, but you can do like a ICP test or whatever, just to kind of see how your elements are, because there's other elements that can affect algae growth as well. So you just got to keep all that in mind and just dial it in, figure out what your issue is, and then just tackle your scenario from there.
Yeah, for sure. And now you, since you're using the algae scrubber, how long have you had a reef tank up before you were using an algae scrubber, and what differences? Because you said you had to dial back the feeding, but what were your tanks like before an algae scrubber, and how much work is an algae scrubber? Like, is it worth it to have one, or?
I think it's worth it. I mean, when I first got this algae scrubber, I was still up north and I had my old NPS tank in the 75 up there. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really see much algae to begin with in the tank because the lights weren't really on much.
Yeah,
but as soon as I came down here and decided I want to change up to 75 and do like a Caribbean tank with more light, I did start to notice some issues, you know, because I was still feeding kind of similar to what I used to do. So I definitely had to add some hours onto the algae scrubber, you know, just leaving it on a little longer just to kind of combat that scenario. But I always leave it on for the exact time that the lights are off in the tank usually.
Yeah.
So as soon as the light goes out, the algae scrubber light kicks on. It helps keep your pH somewhat stable, and it also just keeps removing nutrients throughout the night. So
yeah, and that's like if someone has a space large enough, or I guess a large enough aquarium where they have like space for a sump underneath. You can get away with having a refugium or an algae scrubber down there that's going to be opposite light cycle, opposite schedule of what your tank is. And that's definitely going to help. Like for me, I have a sump, so I'm growing Cato algae down there, and the nutrients is helping that to grow so that in the main display, there's no other kind of green hair algae.
Exactly. Scrubber. Yeah, that's another good point to mention. Like, you don't necessarily have to have algae scrubbers to help combat that, but I mean, refugiums, just keeping like algae in your sump growing out and stuff, that's soaking up nutrients. So if it's soaking it up down there, you're going to have less of an issue up in your display.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially when it gets like this bad right here, there's other things you can do, like 3-day blackouts. Mm-hmm. So that's just turning off your lights for 3 days. Some people cover up the tanks completely, putting cardboard all the way around it or towels or whatever, but pitch black for like 3 days. And I know that people are concerned about corals. I wouldn't go more than 3 days.
Yeah. I mean, 3 days, I mean, you should be totally fine. Cause I mean, if you think about it, over in the Indo-Pacific, they're still getting like, you know, what they call typhoons, what we call hurricanes here, which will like leave areas, you know, kind of cloudy and, you know, overcast for a couple days, and they don't get much of any sunlight.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So yeah, just thinking about how nature affects corals in the wild versus your aquarium, 3 days with no lights, they'll be just fine. And then that will help. You'll start seeing the green hair algae like a little less green. If it starts like turning white and getting looser, it's dying off. So it's easier to pull off of your rock work. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of just going to help that do that.
Definitely.
But all right. So today you have a cool scientific segment for us.
Different one. Usually I do fish, but we're going to throw a Palaethoa in there. This is Palaethoa grandis. I got a bunch in my 75 gallon. Its common name is, you know, the big Pally or Palaethoa grandis, which is kind of funny because most people come up with a different name besides the scientific name, and usually that sticks. But the scientific name stuck with this one. It's a super unique coral. Well, it's not really coral. It's more related to anemones and such. But it's like its own animal. It's super unique. You don't see them too often in the hobby just because, you know, they're harder to find. They come from the Caribbean and Atlantic. Bunch of different color morphs. You get some ugly brown ones. And then you have ones like this picture that are bright green with some white specks. Just super unique. And they get huge, like a couple inches in diameter sometimes. I got some in my system that are quite large. It's just something different, you know, to have in your system. But do be aware when you're handling these or fragging these, you're going to want to be wearing goggles, gloves, mask. Yep. I mean, you've got to be extremely careful with these because these are known to be some of the most toxic Palaethoa there is. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just be extremely careful, but they are super gorgeous. They're super unique. But like I said, just be extremely careful when handling them.
Yeah. And I feel like there's probably two major turnoffs with people putting these in their tanks is the palytoxin but also the colors. I know that with like zoanthids, you're getting a lot of colors, a lot of different cool looks. So like the grandis, like you said, the darker brown ones or these dark green ones here. Yeah, so maybe those are turning people off, but yeah, for sure, definitely be careful with these because you hear that a lot about the toxin that can really make you extremely sick and can be lethal too.
Yeah, I've been to the hospital once for this.
Really?
Palytoxin. Yeah, that was an interesting experience. I was at my old workplace scrubbing off some pallies off of a egg crate rack where we had some of our frags, and I had gloves on, but I had a cut on my thumb, and I was doing this in like a little bin of water. So as I was scrubbing those pallies off, I mean, I was all masked up and like had glasses on, but the water was seeping inside my gloves. So whatever the palytoxin got into the cut that was on my thumb here. And my whole hand was swollen like a balloon. Like I went in and they had no idea what they were dealing with. And I kept telling them, like, this is palytoxin. I know exactly what it is. And they had to look it up.
That's
and
insane.
A bunch of research. And they finally figured it out. And they gave me some antibiotics and it helped with the swelling. And I mean, it was really weird. My hand felt weird for a couple weeks after that. You know, it was still kind of funky to move around and stuff. I mean, I've made a full recovery. Everything's good. So I'm very thankful for that because it definitely could have been a lot worse. I've heard of a lot worse stories than that.
Yeah, also, that's
extremely careful. So
yeah, so it was pain. Was it like pain up?
Yeah, like it was pain
like everywhere,
halfway up my arm, and I try to like kind of hold my arm just to try to keep, you know, it from spreading. But it was pretty painful. and my hand just swelled up like crazy. I should have had a picture. I think I have one I could have put on here. But
we should find that picture. That's crazy. So you were scrubbing them. So yeah. Scrub that off or what?
Yeah. So the egg crate, we had some grow off frag plugs onto the egg crate, and I was just cleaning off the egg crate.
Gotcha.
At the time, I wasn't like who I am now, so I didn't know too much. I knew that they were toxic, but I really,
Yeah.
But yeah, now I know for sure. Wasn't even the Calithoa grandis. It was just like, the Captain Jerks or whatever. It was Captain Jerks.
Yeah, they are jerks. They live up to their name. Dang. Yeah, I got a ton of them in my tank. So, yeah, I should look into removing them. I am trying to clean up the tank and make the sand bed a lot cleaner. So I'm probably going to be getting rid of a lot of those. But yeah, definitely I recommend wearing gloves.
Definitely.
But even wearing gloves, you were wearing gloves. The water.
Yeah, I was. The water got behind the gloves and into the glove, and it got me.
Yeah, you do that with the disposable gloves too. The water's still going to get in there.
Yep.
I have gloves that go up to a little past the wrist, but water still will seep in there.
Yeah.
Need gloves like Moki, the inappropriate reefer.
All the way up to like.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Dang, I did not know that. That's crazy.
Yep.
So. The next thing we wanted to talk about is something that a lot of people deal with all the time is cyanobacteria. And this is just, you'll see a little purple patch sometimes just start like in this video here, and then it just rapidly grows from there. So what advice or what do you have for us about cyano?
So over my years of keeping reef tanks and just communicating with colleagues and stuff, I've always noticed like even if you're keeping a pretty pristine tank, you get certain areas of the tank that are dead zones. Where there's like no flow, a lot of detritus is, piling up. It causes like a little pool of just disgusting matter that ends up being overtaken, by a lot of different kinds of bacteria, like even cyanobacteria. Because cyano doesn't really grow where there's heavy flow because it can't really, hold on very well. Because a lot of people, you could just go in there and waft at it and it's just blown away. But yeah, when you get dead zones in your tank, and even if you do have a little excess nutrients, it will start to build up. I mean, almost every person probably gets it over the course of their reefing career, hobby, or whatever. I mean, it just comes and goes, but like maintaining it, I just say try to, limit those dead zones and limit nutrients, because nutrients is a big factor in it. There's just so many different factors that could play into it, but just limit your dead zones. Try to keep up with your nutrient levels, keep them down. And I mean, that's really about it. But yeah, if you have a little tank and it's just, not too much flow in there, like even smaller tanks specifically, I notice I have bigger issues with because there's not as much flow in them, and the cyanobacteria will just take over the whole tank within a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
So you just got to be really careful.
Yeah, and in my opinion, I think cyanobacteria is the easiest of the things that grow in your tank to kind of take care of. If we're talking about green hair algae versus cyano, green hair algae is a little more tough because you got to get in there, pull it off the rock. Maybe you're messing up your aquascape to deal with it. But cyano is relatively easy. You can increase the water flow to help. But me personally, I use red slime remover, and that doesn't have any algae sides in it or anything. But you have to follow the instructions because it does call for a water change afterwards. And you don't want to skip that water change and like leave that stuff in the system. So follow the instructions, you'll be just fine. However, for you, you have a different approach because you've used something like that before we were talking about. Like if you had sponges in your tank, it kind of
Chemi-clean. Yeah,
the Chemi-clean. Okay.
Yes. So I've used that in the past and it works great. It does for that. But what I noticed when I used it in my tank that had sponges and stuff in them, it killed off the sponges just as fast as it killed the cyano.
Really? So,
yeah, I'm not entirely sure why that is. But yeah, I just irritated the sponges and it killed them right off super quick. Yeah, it was super unfortunate.
Yeah.
But yeah, now if I ever get it, I just try to, take a little siphon in and just try to siphon it off the sand bed. Because I usually only get it in one spot in the 75 every so often. But yeah, I mean, I just try to manually remove it the best that I can and just kind of monitor my nutrients. Just kind of keep that on tabs.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. I mean, if a little bit is showing up in your tank, it's not a huge cause for concern.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were saying, it's could be just a dead zone there. So you increase the water flow in that area, it's not going to be able to attach. And then, yeah, you can just pull that stuff out too. But if you're not checking parameters or it's starting to take over everywhere, then red slime remover works for me. But yeah, definitely siphoning it out the best you can. first. Mm-hmm. That'll give you a head start before you use a product like that. But yeah, I believe Red Slime Remover should be safe for sponges and everything. It didn't affect any corals in mine, but
yeah,
you were talking Kimmy Clean, which is similar but different product. But yeah, it's worked for a lot of people that I've spoken to as well.
Awesome. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not dogging Kimmy Clean in any way. It was just
right.
Didn't work for the sponges. So
yeah,
keep that in mind. But yeah, the corals were completely fine. All the Gorgonians, all the, like the LPS and Sun corals were completely fine. And it was just weird. The sponges just did not tolerate it very well. And I mean, it may be because they're more of a filter feeding invertebrate that like take in, you know, stuff from the water column. So that can affect them pretty quickly, I guess. So they may have just taken in too much and it's just gotten into their system and pretty much ate them from the inside out.
Yeah, that could be. What are some more takeaways? What are your like best pieces of advice for green hair algae and then the best pieces of advice for cyano?
My best thing of advice, I got two things here. Just kind of keep up, monitor your nutrients, you know, do your testing. And then if you do start to, you know, figure out, okay, like I have hair algae up, I have cyano, try to, you know, find the source of the problem before you go buying a bunch of different products. Cause I mean, there's multiple different reasons for why each of these organisms can occur, like the green hair algae. It can be nutrients or it can be super high iron levels. I mean, there's multiple different factors. And with the cyano, I mean, you could have lack of flow, super high nutrients. There's a couple other factors as well, but just try to find the source of the problem and then go from there. Don't just, you know, jump to conclusions and try a certain product just because you think that's what's causing it, but there could be an easier way around that. So just source your problem and go from there. That's my best advice.
Very cool. And if you're setting up a brand new aquarium and you need kind of a checklist somewhere to start, you can download the free reef tank checklist that I have for you in the description below. That's going to let you know what type of equipment you may want or have to have in your aquarium. It's also going to give you some parameters to test for at the beginning stages. And once you get past like the nitrogen cycle and stuff like that, it's going to give you more things to test for as well. So if you want that free reef tank checklist, go ahead and get that down in the show notes or description below. And as always, thank you so much for checking out this episode of the Coral Reef Talk podcast. If you learned something, let us know about it in the comment section below, and like, comment, subscribe, and we will see you in the next one.
See ya.